the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. Good Monday, off the weekend. I had an event happen that I'm pretty open on this show. Stuff happens in my life. We have Josh Weinfuss, who is coming up here on the Cardinals and the pursuit of Sean Payton, Kyler Murray's future, DeAndre Hopkins' future, how Michael Bidwell handled everything. Josh Weinfuss here momentarily. John Wilner will be with us. Wilner Hotline on a Monday with ASU and UCLA, the big showdown in basketball coming up this week. I'll also have a lot of football to get into with John. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support on this MLK holiday. I will be heading from here over to Marcos Denisa High School, Martin Luther King basketball tournament that the great Mark Beasley puts on. I'm going to see Monty Williams' kid play hoops today. I hear he's very good over at Scottsdale Christian. I hear I'm going to see two players that will be in the WNBA and perhaps the number one player in the nation on the ladies' side from Desert Vista. So that's part of my day. But I have to talk about my embarrassing moment. It could have been a lot worse. So if you remember the movie Home Alone, just went through the holidays. Home Alone is on all of the time. Home Alone. There's a scene in Home Alone where the paint can comes down off of the stairway and smacks him right in the mouth and he loses his tooth. So here I am, the brain surgeon of brain surgeons in the Sesmatt household. I go outside on Saturday and I say, you know, I got to take these Christmas lights down. I stapled them in this year. I didn't do the hooks. You guys can laugh at me all you want, but that's what I did. Stapled them in, went outside, and I start pulling them down. It's no problem. It's no problem. I'm just cut off in Never Never Land. It's before the playoffs start. It's Saturday morning. I'm doing my thing. And I pull one down from the highest ceiling, and all of a sudden, the highest rafter, I see it just wham. I kept my tooth. But man, it hurts today. Oh my gosh. And it didn't hurt in the moment. I woke up yesterday like, okay, what the heck? And then I remember, oh, I whacked my tooth with a Christmas light. So I'm an idiot. Okay, that stuff happens. It does. I'm sure we've all, guys, I am not the handiest. I have a hard time gapping a spark plug or changing a light bulb. That's just who I am. I can come on here and talk sports. I can do a whole bunch of things in life, but I wasn't blessed with that ability to do some of these things. I like to go out and mow the grass. It's fine. Christmas lights, wham, idiot Brad. All right. So yeah, my weekend, and people are starting to, they're starting to get on my case a little bit because of Brock Purdy. Eventually there'll be backlash on Brock from some people because some people are just miserable in their own existence. Some people just don't like to live. They don't like to see people have success. And I kind of like it when someone comes up to me at an event and says, Mr. Sesmatt, what community college do you think I should go to? And then all these years later, it's really not that far ago. It was December 5th, 2017 when he asked me. And here he is two wins away from the Super Bowl at quarterback. He was over at Perry High School. I don't know. How do you not like that story unless you're just miserable in your own existence? You just don't have any grace. You just don't have much of a life other than just to hate on people. That's your deal. Not my deal. So when people are like, oh man, love affair, man crush, guilty. What you gonna do about it? And I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying this story. We're not supposed to root. We're not. It was ingrained in us, those of us that are north of 40. You want to get into journalism, you have to be down the middle. And it's fine. But, you know, through the years, I've learned to look at that and say, yeah, my golf game's not down the middle. So if every now and then I push one to the side because I see somebody that is doing something that is exceptional and I've gotten to know them a little bit because I'm into documentaries, I'm into deep dives, I'm into things that's not just what happens for 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon or in a sporting event. You can't do it all the time. I am certainly not going to be the guy that says we and us. That will never, if that happens, put me out to pasture. We have to get the right coach. We have to, if we can just, no. If I start doing we and us, then I am going to be in Fargo, North Dakota, doing we and us around the local high school. That's it. I'm not going to sit here and wear red on Cardinal days or orange and purple when the Suns are playing. Those days are gone. I didn't like those days even when I was in those days. Like, are you serious? Well, the consultant says that, you know, that you could soften your image. Maybe I don't want my image softened. Maybe I kind of like who I am. Well, because I'm wearing purple today, does that mean I'm rooting for the Suns in Memphis? No, hell no. Hell no. I just go through stories, and it's not just Brock Purdy. There's people that I've seen that have come through, and I get attached to them in a way of looking at and saying, I hope they do well. Like, do I care who they play this week? No, I don't care the 49ers play. I don't care if it's Tampa Bay or Dallas. Don't care. Do I want Brock? Yep. If they lose, am I going to be like, oh, man. No. When I hear people that say, I have to go for a walk because my team lost, thank God that's never been me. I don't want to be so wrapped up in things that I miss my wife, my kids, my family, my life, the ability to go hike, I played pickleball over the weekend for the first time. I played pickleball. I wasn't very good at it. My wife said, you kind of moved a little slow. Like, oh. But she said, you could be good. You know, as tall as you are. It was she and I against my brother-in-law and her sister. And it's the first time I've ever done it. How many 6'8 pickleball players do you know? I don't know many. And I'm like, you can't go in the kitchen. If you guys play pickleball, like, we found ourselves yesterday watching some pickleball on CBS Sports Network. That is L for loser. Like, oh, it's fine. It's fun. But we're like watching pickleball on our smart TV. It's really interesting. So it was a fun weekend. I saw all sorts of nonsense in the NFL. I did. Did you? Did you see the ability or inability to use timeouts correctly? Did you see the inability or inability to use clock management correctly? It was all very entertaining. Did you see blown calls by the officials? Yeah, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of that. Never leave an NFL game in the postseason with timeouts in your pocket if you're John Harbaugh. Never finish a game with you're trying to win and you're the Miami Dolphins and you get a delay of game. You're trying to pull it out. If you're Kirk Cousins, I don't know, throw to the marker. Throw for the first down. If you're a Vikings fan today, you had to be losing your mind. So it was entertaining. Sean Payton, we're going to talk about this with Josh Weinfuss in a few minutes. Michael Bidwell giving full authority to anybody to run his franchise would be a stark contrast from what we've seen through the years. So that's why I'm looking at this saying, I can't imagine Michael paying this. People are like, oh, you really hate a Michael Bidwell. No, it's just I've seen this record before. It's like if you're a Charger fan today, you know that was very Charger-esque of them. Show me your lightning bolt. It was very Charger-esque of them what happened in Jacksonville. Me? I saw Christian Kirk. I saw a player who should still be here, but he's not. Brock Purdy. See a player that Arizona State never got on campus. Never officially offered a scholarship. Embarrassment. That's what I see. I see the local side of it. Now, on the basketball end of things, we have the Suns in Memphis today. Ja Morant may play, may not. Suns are supposed to get Cam Johnson back. If you watch this show or take in my content, our content, regularly, you know that I am not one to sit here and make a huge hill of anything out of NBA basketball in the regular season. In fact, most sports in the regular season here in our country, the NFL, regular season in September, October, crapola. NBA, October, November, up to Christmas, really not good. January, oh, okay, starting to figure it out, middle of the season. Cam Johnson's supposed to be back. So I have not sat here and done the, oh my gosh, what are they going to do? I've not done that. Our show's a little different. There's lots of places you can go for gnashing of teeth and be angry over nothing. Lots of places, not here. Not here. I'm not going to play the game of, well, the Suns really stink right now. Yeah, pretty obvious. Okay, doesn't take a brain surgeon. Devin Booker's not playing. Chris Paul's not playing. DeAndre Ayton's not playing. Cam Johnson. Really not that. Jay Crowder's not here. Oh, they better get it figured out. No, they don't. It's January. I know it's a long winter. You got to work at this a little bit if you're going to just do the easy, low-hanging fruit crap. This isn't that hard. When they get the players back, let's see where they are February 9th, trade deadline. Let's see where they are March 1st a little bit. Let's see where they really are around March 20th. And at the end of the day, when the season ends, and if they have their full complement of players together, and those players aren't put together with like two games to go in the regular season, because I do believe that there is some merit to playing 10, 15 games thereabouts. The Warriors did last year. I keep going back to the Warriors of last season. Go look at it. They dinked around, didn't play guys, load managed, all that stuff until late March. Got to be fresh, got to be into it for the run. If they don't win, then the pressure will fall, should fall directly on Monty Williams. It should. If they don't have a successful postseason, and if these players are all back by third week in March, around March 20th, wake me up then. Until then, not going to get too high, too low. It's great for the gamblers. So I think this week the buildup of Arizona State against UCLA this Thursday night, because ASU is playing so well. By the way, Dr. Crow, it'd be nice to come into a crowded arena that was, I don't know, not a dump, that was pristine. Dr. Crow, do you really care about athletics? Dr. Crow, do you really? Forget about Ray Anderson, forget about everybody else. Dr. Crow, does it mean anything to you when you walk into this building, or is it just, well, it's nostalgic and we have all these other things that are going on? No. No. Would be nice to walk into a place where, I don't know, there's suites. Be nice to walk into a place where Bobby Hurley could actually take recruits and say, this is it, or give them the image of, look, we're tearing this dump down after 50 years, and by the way, you could be the guys that come here. Bobby's having a great season. What has the president done to support him on that in his facility? Very little of anything. That's a fact. Oh, you're hating. Pitchforks. No. No. Anybody who says that place is the best in the conference or even mid or doesn't matter at all, you're on the payroll. It's fine. You graduated from there. Nothing's ever wrong with ASU. They're just going to be what they are. That should be updated. No question about it. In terms of beating UCLA, like UCLA's playing well enough. I'm going to talk to Wilner about this. Is there a team in the Pac-12 that is a Final Four team in Houston in late March? I don't think it's U of A. And for those that have said, you know, Tommy Lloyd is winning with Sean Miller's players, there's probably a little bit of truth to that right now. Probably is. Josh Weinfuss, ESPN, Arizona Cardinal insider, covers them. Frontwards, backwards. We'll have Josh on and then John Wilner, all things around the Pac-12. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. We appreciate you being with us. And we're back with Josh Weinfuss on Sean Payton and much more next. All right, Josh Weinfuss with us for a couple of minutes. ESPN, NFL, covers the Cardinals inside and out. A week after Cliff is shown the door and Michael Bidwell stands up front and says that they're making changes. I wanted to have Josh on for a few minutes. Okay, it's been a week. What have you learned about this whole situation now that you've had some time to reflect on it? What are your takeaways? Did anything catch you a week later on what transpired from Michael's press conference and everything that took place?
So nothing new. I'm still impressed with kind of how he handled it. I'll be honest. He went for about 24 minutes, which was about 18 minutes longer than I expected him to go. And that's just because he doesn't usually say much. And I thought it would be cut off after a while, you know, I was impressed. He took the questions. He was, I thought, fairly transparent. You know, he gave, I thought, honest answers to a degree, and I was not expecting any of that. No one in that room really was expecting any of that. So it was good to see. It was good to hear. I think it helped a lot of us with our reporting and kind of get an idea of what this search is going to be like. You know, he's kind of treading into unknown waters because he's never done a search without Steve Keim by his side. And he's he is relying on a lot of people around that building that he normally wouldn't rely on in a search like this for their help. So it's going to be interesting. I think that, you know, it's when you look at why he fired Cliff, I think that the one thing we didn't hear is the relationship, right? It was the production. He was one of your winningest coaches of all time. And this year was full of injuries and suspensions and just, it didn't go as anywhere near as planned. So I part of me expected him to bring back Cliff for another year. I did, because, you know, there are a lot of excuses, a lot of built-in excuses. You didn't have DeAndre Hopkins for 6 games. You didn't have Kyler Murray for 5 games. You didn't have Zach Ertz for, what, 7 or 8 games. The offensive line wasn't whole for most of the season, or all of the season almost. So part of me expected him to bring back Cliff, but the one thing we did not hear during the press conference was one of the reasons that he didn't bring back Cliff is because that relationship with Kyler Murray is at a breaking point, if not it already has broken. He kind of stayed away from that. So other than that, I thought it was a better press conference than anyone expected. You know, the search is going. They've interviewed a handful of GM candidates, has started to interview head coaching candidates. So it's going, hopefully it gets wrapped up for my sake in the next week or so, but I don't know. I just don't know when it's going to be wrapped up.
A general manager first before coach. That was a question that was asked during the press conference. To me, that's a no-brainer. We're going to hire our GM first rather than the coach, but Michael did leave the door open. Were you surprised by that?
No, just because of the pace of how the hiring process goes. And I think there are so many good head coaching candidates out there, especially if you look at the offensive coordinator group this year. There's a lot of good guys, a lot of guys who I think would fit this team very well, and a lot of guys who I think could coach Kyler Murray to take him to that next level. So if those guys were available and they had to, you know, I hate using this term, but if they have to quote unquote pull the trigger, I don't think Michael's going to hesitate and say, oh, no, we need to get our GM candidate in first, and then we're going to hire you. Like, you don't want to lose out to another team for head coaching guys, especially with, you know, how important they are these days. So that did not surprise me.
Okay. So the candidates that are out there as we talk today, any name that, and I could run through all of them, but I don't want to take up all this time. Any name that you look at and say, Brad, if they nail this guy, this makes the most sense, because my first metric is fixing Kyler Murray. That's got to be my first metric on a hire. So that's got to be an offensive hire, or is it, well, you can build your staff. So let's just talk about the names that are out there today and one or two that may jump out at you. It's like, this is a no-brainer.
For head coach?
Yeah.
Well, I think really the only one we know is Vance. Now, I'm trying to think back real quick. Who they've interviewed. Obviously, they got permission to interview Sean Payton, but I just think he's going to be, I mean, that's the guy everybody wants, right? That's the number one question. I really think he's going to be too much money for this franchise. I don't see Michael paying in the, you know, neighborhood of $15 million or more a year for head coach. I mean, $15 million might have been 3 years of Cliff Kingsbury's contract, right? Like, I just don't see that happening. Vance Joseph, I know the fans might not be happy with that, but I think it might not be a terrible hire. Because like you said, like I think this is more about the staff. You know, I think Michael learned. So, you know, he went from an offensive coach in Bruce Arians, who was a quarterback guru. And then you went to a defensive head coach in Steve Wilkes. Then you went to an offensive head coach in Cliff Kingsbury. I think he's learned. It doesn't matter, right? Like, it doesn't matter what the head coach is, because if you need someone to fix Kyler Murray, that could be done with an offensive coordinator and a quarterbacks coach. That doesn't necessarily need to be done with the head coach. You need a head coach that can handle a team, that can handle a locker room, that could, you know, bring down the iron fist when needed. And that was something that Cliff Kingsbury, as much as I like him as a person, could not do and did not do as a head coach. You know, you almost want to see the offensive coordinator and the quarterbacks coach be kind of that good cop, whereas a head coach kind of maybe be the bad cop to the quarterback. Hmm. I do think there are a lot of guys out there that could fix Kyler Murray. And sure, some of those are offensive-minded coaches who, as a head coach, would be a, quote, offensive head coach. You know, I really like the guy from Philadelphia. I think he would be a great fit here. I think the guy from Miami would be a great fit here, just because of the types of quarterbacks they coach. And you bring that to Kyler Murray, who is more talented than Tua, I think. You know, Jalen Hurts, I think, is he better than Jalen Hurts? I don't know yet. People close to Kyler like to tell me he is, but what we've seen production wise. I don't know if that's the answer. So I think that it doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily need to go out and get the offensive head coach or the defensive head coach. You need to get a guy who can run an organization and then let him hire the right people under him.
Is it fair, Josh, to go to the Cardinals have had 31 of 35 years where they haven't gone to the postseason. The history of the franchise is just dreadful. This is one of the franchises that you're just going to go to. You're going to get your time and you're going to get fired. It's not the Pittsburgh Steelers where it's three coaches in 50 years. The criticism leveled towards Michael, I think, is fair. Numbers don't lie. So am I supposed to believe that they're going to get it figured out this time? Do you believe that Michael's matured? As you said earlier, his dad's not here now. And Steve's not here. Rod Graves isn't here. Bob Ferguson isn't here. I mean, all the names that have gone through these doors that I've seen. Why is it now the time that Michael's got it figured out?
Oh, I don't know if he's got it figured out. I think this is his best chance to get it figured out, right? I think there'll be one major telltale sign to tell us if he's on the path of figuring out. If he goes external for both candidates, for head coach and GM, I think we're going to see that there's some growth in him as a person, as an owner, as a manager, because it's been too easy just to keep promoting from within for the GM job, especially. And the easy way out now would be promote Quentin Harris and or Adrian Wilson, and then promote Vance Joseph, and you're done, right? Like, just put a bow on it, you're out of here. The hard option is, let's go find an outside candidate for GM who doesn't understand Michael or his culture, and a head coach who's the exact same way. And I think that if he does that, if he hires both of those from outside the organization, I think that's a sign that he's willing to try something new to win, finally.
The conversation of, is it a good job in Arizona versus the other places that are open? Is Arizona a better job than Denver? Is it a better job than Carolina? Indianapolis. Do you look at that and weigh that as well? Is this a good job compared to the other places that are open for candidates to look at and say, I want that one?
It depends on what you look at, right? Like, I think first and foremost, now the way the NFL is structured and where it is and where it's going, the definition of a good job is there a quarterback in place? And yes, you have a very good quarterback in place. Sure, he's hurt, but he'll come back and he'll be, if not who he was, very close to who he was. So that checks a major box, right? The roster, people can make too much of a deal over what a roster looks like, because these rosters turn over so much every year. And look at Cliff Kingsbury's first roster. The way it turns over, if you say it's a 50% turnover every year, by year four, you barely have anybody there from the first year, right? Like, it just turns over so much besides the stars, the foundational pieces. So that I'm not worried about. I think when you start taking a look at the next level, right, peel back that onion, you're looking at what kind of ownership you're working for and what that person, what his reputation's like, how he runs a building, how he looks at the finances of a team. Is he going to give you the money to win? Is he going to spend? That type of thing. And I think when you look at that, I don't know if this is a good job, right? I think you look at how Michael has, you know, his reputation around the league, how he approaches spending. You know, you hear the story that he didn't let Cliff fire assistant coaches this year because he didn't want to pay the buyout. Well, if I'm a head coach, I'm thinking, well, if one of these guys doesn't work out and he has $1 million, $2 million buyout, I'm stuck with him probably. Like, you don't want to hear those head coach. So from a football standpoint, yeah, sure, it's a good job. I mean, I think all these jobs are pretty much good jobs, right? Especially this one, because you do have a quarterback in place, and that is the primary, you know, that's the foundational piece of any team. Beyond that, I don't know if it's a good job. A lot of people look at this and say, well, I can live in Phoenix for 3-4 years and, you know, make my money and then maybe sign an extension to get fired. Like, location-wise, it also is a good job. So to me, the major question mark for these guys is going to be, or the major question, I guess, is, do you want to work for Michael Biddle? That's what it comes down to.
It's interesting because you do have Sean Payton out there. Can you see Michael Bidwell parting with a draft pick or draft picks to get Sean Payton one? Could you see Sean Payton coming to Arizona, not being the general manager, just being a coach? Address Sean Payton.
So... I'll answer your questions first and get into what I think. Can I see Michael Bidwell parting ways with a draft pick to get him? Yes. Can I see Sean Payton not being a GM? Yes and no. I think the agreement would have to be, I don't need to be the GM in name. I need to be the GM in action or have a significant say in what my roster looks like. And I think this goes back to the question of if you can get the head coach first, I'm sure it applies to this. Like if you get him first, then you find a GM who's okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you find a GM first who says, no, this is my team, this is my roster, you find a coach who can deal with that, then we're talking a different ballgame. But I also don't know any GM who's going to say, I don't want to work with Sean Payton. You know, I think that they would be willing to come to a compromise, which Michael also addressed in his press conference. Here's the thing. If you take this roster as is right now, which it won't be this way the second week of March, like this is a 12-win team, in my opinion, with Sean Payton as a head coach.
Mm.
So that's kind of, you know, to me, the big thing. The elephant in the room is the money. Like I said earlier, like I don't see Michael spending $15 million a year for whatever, 5 to 10 years on Sean Payton. I just don't see it. So I know that Sean Payton wants to stay in this part of the country. So there's only, what, a handful of jobs. You're looking at, you know, Rams, Chargers, Cardinals, Raiders, Broncos. How many of those, you know, there's two of those open. You might see, you know, one more open the next day or two in the Chargers. I don't know, you know, does he want to stay in LA? Probably, preferably, but same thing with the Chargers. Are they going to pay him? I think it all comes down to money. It really does.
The roster makeup, you addressed DeAndre Hopkins a little bit earlier. Do you anticipate him being here next season? Or do you think that when we do get to March, that's going to be the big key?
I don't expect him to be here next year. And I think that it's something that the Cardinals are going to regret. I think when you have him on the field, it changes the entire complexion of a defense. It changes how teams approach the Cardinals. But I think that the finances are going to get in the way. He's his own agent. He's going to want to get paid. He's probably going to want to win a title somewhere. But at the same time, I could see him looking at the head coach, I mean, or whoever the head coach is, and saying, all right, I'm going to make my decision after they hire someone. And if it's a Sean Payton, if it's someone that he believes in, you know, I can see him saying, you know, let's restructure. Give me all this money up front. You know, lower my cap number and let's go win some ball games. Because he's still an elite receiver.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going to come down to his cap number and his salary number, both of which are sky high next year. So, you know, he's in what, 31, 32, that age range. I don't know if the team's going to look at him and say, hey, like, you're probably at that point where you're not productive. But at the same time, look at what he had a pretty good year. He had a great year last year, 2 years ago, I guess now, you know, but to me, more importantly, it's like what he does. You put him split wide, like, you're going to have obviously corner on him. You're going to have at least one safety on him. That's two or three guys of your defense who are dedicated to one player. That opens up everything. If you have the right play caller, the right play designer, like that is a major advantage for an offense. And that's all because one man's on the field. So you lose that if you don't bring DeAndre Hopkins back. But again, it all comes down to money.
Okay, you said earlier about Kyler Murray that, you know, you believe it sounds, I'm not putting words in your mouth, correct me if I'm wrong, you believe that he is still an elite quarterback within this league. And that said, do you believe that he will be ready, we're not doctors here, October? Do you believe that next year is make or break for him here in Arizona? Let's go through Kyler Murray a little deeper.
So I do think he's an elite quarterback. I don't think that's changed. I think he hasn't been coached properly. And I think that is because Cliff Kingsbury was too soft on him. I think from everything I've heard, you know, he reacts and responds very well to being coached hard. And that is something he did not receive here. So I think you put him with a true NFL head coach, which Cliff Kingsbury was not that. And I think that we could see drastically different results from him.
Mm.
People have asked me, do I think if he's uncoachable or not? And I said, you know, I'm not ready to label him. I do want to see how he does after playing for an actual coach, an actual NFL head coach. If you go, you know, whether it's Sean Payton or somebody else, if, you know, 2-3 years from now we have this conversation and we're seeing the same results, then my opinion and my evaluation of him might change. But for now, I think he's an elite quarterback. I think his talent was wasted under Cliff. The man who was a quarterback for the first 7 games of the 21 season nothing's changed. You just put him in a position where every defense knew what you were doing and you didn't respond appropriately. And you can't blame the quarterback because, you know, sure, he can check out of everything in the line of scrimmage, but he's not the one designing the game plan. He's not the one that, you know, essentially calling the initial play. Like, you got to put – people, I think, are too quick to blame Kyler for a lot of things because they just don't like him. And I think that's unfair and irresponsible as a fan, but fans are going to be fans. So I don't expect him back any earlier than October next year. I think it could be a situation where, depending on the head coach and the situation, you know, how the season goes, maybe he takes a little bit longer. But I mean, definitely, I don't think earlier than any point in October. But the problem is, like, you know, his cap number skyrockets in 24, and there's like 2 or 3 years of very high cap numbers. So if you're the Cardinals and you think you need to move him, you have to move him next year. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, no one's taking on that load. So is he a Cardinal long-term? Probably at this point, especially if he has a good season when he comes back, or if he shows signs of, you know, having a good season. I don't know if Michael's going to want to, but then again, Michael, I think, thinks differently than a lot of owners in this league, but I would not expect him to say, you know what, he had an okay year coming up an injury, let's move him or cut him or whatever it is before we see how he plays healthy a full year on a healthy knee. So that's my take.
Who is the quarterback to open next season for the Arizona Cardinals?
Oh, I think now that Cliff Kingsbury is out of the picture, we have no idea. Like, I don't know if it's going to be Colt. Some guys don't want to bring in his own guy. You know, like, that's it's too early for that. I think we need to see who the head coach is first. I think Colts, McCoy, he could do it. I just don't think – I think you're going to want it as a head coach. You're going to want to bring in your men. And every coach has their guy, right? They all have their backup that they're going to want to – or their quarterback that they're going to want to bring in and run their scheme with. So I don't know at this point.
Josh Weinfuss with us for a few minutes. Appreciate the time and insight, as always, at ESPN. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's chop it up with John Wilner as we do every Monday. Wilner Hotline is where you can find his content over on Twitter, of course, on the website at sports360az.com. Doesn't matter what it is around the Pac-12 on the football and basketball fronts, men's and women's basketball, by the way. John brings it along with his staff to us at Sports360. We appreciate the partnership here coming up on year three at some point this year around August. So as we're sitting here today, Mr. Wilner, do you believe that the Pac-12 in basketball, let's start on the hoop side, will have a team in the Final Four in Houston?
I do. I actually think UCLA, yes, I do. I think UCLA is good enough to get there this year, to win four games. And they, you know, they were there 2 seasons ago. But I think they've got a little bit more athleticism. It's a, you know, same ability to grind. And in the NCAA tournament, you've got to be able to win grinders. They can execute in half court on both sides of the floor. And they've added some more athleticism with Adam Bona and Amari Bailey. At some point, Bailey, I think, will be back. But to me, that was the missing piece for the Bruins was that element of athleticism.
That's interesting. Mick Cronin's – I remember when the hire came down, there was a, who's this guy and why is he going to be the one that turns around UCLA? What's he done so well? Is it just recruiting, or do you like his game management? Tell me about him a little bit.
Well, he's – the interesting thing is they bungled the search and had all these leaks, you know, John Calipari leak, other high-profile guys. They ended up with a terrific coach. And if there had been no leaks, or if they had just gone for Mick Cronin in the first place, you know, the whole perception of their search and of Cronin's hiring would have been better. But he's a really good coach. And, you know, they nailed it with him. It was just the process that was a little screwy. He is a lot, in my opinion, he has done a lot what Ben Hallen did 20 years ago when he took over and got him to the Final Four 3 years in a row. Yes, he recruited well, but they're just so well coached, and they play defense, and they don't have any of the Hollywood hot dog stuff, right? They can just play solid basketball on both sides. And when you're UCLA, you're going to get really good players, and that's what he's done.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Thursday night because UCLA and Bobby Hurley at the Dump in I think that's going to be my new nickname, is the Dump, for the arena, because that's what it is. And I look at the job that Bobby is doing. The top 25 comes out today. I think ASU should be in it. You know, how many people saw their wins up at Oregon and Oregon State because of the networks they were on? That's a whole nother topic. But UCLA against Arizona is usually the game that everybody points towards. And I'll get to that in a minute. But Arizona State and the job that Bobby Hurley has done, John, looking towards this Thursday night's game, the Sun Devils have a shot here, or are they still not close to UCLA?
Well, it'll be interesting because they really, you know, they didn't play well against Arizona. Arizona, you know, beat them pretty handily, right? Now, UCLA is a little bit different. Arizona's got that Twin Towers thing, and I think that was problematic for ASU up front. ASU so perimeter-oriented. UCLA is not quite like Arizona in that regard. So I think that size-wise, it's probably a little bit better matchup for the Sun Devils, but it is still a next-level opponent. UCLA is playing better than anybody in the conference right now, and they're going to force ASU to take bad shots, and they're going to make ASU play defense. Defense has been the calling card for the Sun Devils. Mm-hmm. But they're going to have to really execute defensively in this case because UCLA runs its stuff so well. We'll see. You know, I would not be surprised if ASU won, but I thought ASU would be more competitive against Arizona than it was, frankly. So we'll see. But this is the standard right now in the Pac-12, UCLA.
Okay, so UCLA and Arizona, I'm going to jump ahead here. There's been some who've said, you know, Tommy Lloyd is winning with players left over from Sean Miller's era. And the team has started to fade a little bit. Or is it just a midseason burp? Are they trying to figure it out? They haven't found a replacement for Mathrin. You and I spoke about that last week. As we look at UCLA and Arizona, or just where Arizona is right now under Tommy Lloyd, is there any reason to be concerned from your view about what's going on in Tucson?
Well, I think you should be concerned. It kind of depends on your time frame, right? Long term, I think the program is in really good hands with Lloyd. But short term, you know, the next month, 2 months until Selection Sunday, I think there's probably a little bit of reason to be concerned. They're going to make the tournament, and they could end up winning the Pac-12 tournament or maybe the Pac-12 regular season, although now they're three games back at UCLA. The issue is the guard play. They have not gotten consistent high-level guard play without Mathrin and also without Dalen Terry. You know, those guys could go get the make shots, create shots, make plays defensively as well, and they aren't as good on the perimeter. They're very inside-oriented, and it's, you know, that's not the way the game is these days. It'll be interesting to see if they don't, you know, they haven't shot well in their losses, and they've lost three games by double digits to teams that may not make the NCAA tournament. Oregon, Utah, Washington State, those are bubble teams at best. And Arizona has been beaten soundly by all three.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Wilner Hotline, you can find all of his content around the Pac-12 on sports360az.com or follow him on Wilner Hotline. I'm going to dive into football here for a little bit. Do you like where Arizona State and Arizona have gone from when the season ended in football? We're sitting here now in mid-January. Do you like the trajectory of both programs, or do you feel like, Brad, you know, if we're talking about off seasons, they've replaced a coach at Arizona State. Arizona's still Arizona, but really they're still going to be looking way up at the top of the conference. Where do you come down on that?
Maybe a little bit of both. You know, I think Jed Fish continues to do a good job retooling his roster. And I think that, you know, if you're an ASU fan, Kenny Dillingham has done as well as you could have hoped with his decisions on transfers, with his decisions on the coaching staff, with the way they're kind of remaking their recruiting, the foundation of their recruiting, especially in state. You can't complain. Now, ASU's still waiting for the NCAA to you know, rule on the penalties. We'll see how bad that is. So I think if you're a fan of either team, things are going well, but I also think they're still looking way up because how are they relative to the competition? Well, Colorado's gotten better too. Utah's got a lot of key guys coming back, SC key guys coming back. So, you know, just from that standpoint, I think ASU will probably win a couple more games, but I don't know that either program is ready to finish in the top half of the conference. Pac-12 is going to be loaded. The really good teams this past season are all bringing back their quarterbacks. It is going to be very difficult for either Arizona school to get into the top six, I think. And Colorado, you know, Colorado was a loss. You know, that was a win for both last year. I don't know that that's a win anymore.
Do you believe Dion has done enough? I know it's January, John, but do you believe that Colorado is going to be a factor in W's and L's next season? Or is it just, no, they're going to get a lot of headlines because it's Deion Sanders?
Both. The headlines are going to keep coming. There's no question about that. I mean, it is unbelievable. He's got the, I think Amazon's even doing a series on him. Not yet, but there is still time left, not only in the current transfer portal, which is open until January 18th. Then there is another signing day in early February. And then the transfer portal opens again in early May, you know, and all along guys can, you know, that's just for entering the portal. Guys can make decisions anytime. I think that by the middle of May, his roster will be overhauled enough that Colorado will be a threat to win, you know, four or five games next season and at least be close. This past year, they weren't even close other than their win against Cal. They got blown out by everybody. They're not going to get blown out by everybody. They are going to win a few and make a lot of teams sweat.
Okay, let's do some business side of sports because you and I both like doing this. Kevin Warren leaving the Big Ten. How does this impact the Pac-12? What does this say about what happened last summer where USC and UCLA bolted and then he's out the door? Is there a sense of relief? Does this strain relations? There's a lot there. Can you just surmise what you make out of the Kevin Warren leaving the Big Ten? Because I do think for Pac-12 fans, they should look at that closely.
They should. I think it turns down the heat a little bit in terms of whether the Big Ten was going to try to add Oregon and Washington and Bay Area schools and get to a 20 team conference and create a Western division that would basically blow up the Pac-12. I think the heat has maybe turned down a little bit on that. Warren was the one pushing for more expansion, for adding Oregon and Washington. The presidents aren't interested, and the Big Ten's media partners don't have enough money to make that work. I mean, you're going to add two or four schools. That's hundreds of millions of dollars you'd have to add to the Big Ten's annual cash haul. And I don't think the media partners have that money at hand. So the heat's turned down a little bit. I don't think anything materially changes. The Big Ten doesn't appear to be ready to expand again, but certainly there's going to be less noise about it. I think that will help the Pac-12 kind of settle. And, you know, the conference has got to get its media deal done here in the next month or two, or else I think schools are going to start to panic.
The story about the bill to keep Washington and Washington State together, is that grandstanding from your view, or do you think there's some merit to that? And this came out last week, if fans missed out on this. It was a bill that was introduced last week to keep the Cougars and the Huskies together. There's been a lot of conversation about the Huskies going elsewhere. Does this do anything for you, mean anything to you?
Not yet. I mean, I think it's got a long way to go. You know, certainly Washington will be fighting it. And we'll see if there's any kind of complementary bill or comparable bill coming out of Oregon. I always thought that if the UC Regents didn't force UCLA to stay, that that would set a precedent in both Oregon and Washington, both with the Regents and legislatures in terms of whether they would try to keep those schools together. Because Oregon and Washington have both followed California's lead on a lot of stuff since the pandemic started. So to me, it's worth watching, but it's so early right now in the legislative process that it's a little bit interesting, but I don't think that it's something that we should, you know, necessarily pay super close attention to yet.
Okay, let's bounce back. One last question. I'll get you out of here. For Arizona State and Arizona fans direct on this topic, are they in the Pac-12? Because I get asked this when I go do speaking things or just run into people. Are we leaving? Are we going? Do you believe that Arizona State and Arizona will be part of a Pac-12, or do you believe there's still an opportunity potentially for them to go to the Big 12 or some other conference?
I think it depends on your time frame. In my mind, it is very likely that those schools will remain in the Pac-12 along with the Pacific Northwest schools and Utah and Colorado, Bay Area. Those 10 will stay together and sign a new media deal that'll take them through the rest of this decade. Once we get to the 2030s, all bets are off the table in college sports. I think there's a good chance that at that point, the Big Ten and the SEC will expand again to 20 or 24 teams, and the Power Five will become probably a Power Three. Now, whether that's 2030, 2035, I don't know. because it, a lot of it depends on the contracts that the ACC and the Big Ten have. But I think if you're asking in 2035 or 2040, are the Arizona schools in the Pac-12? The answer is probably not. Wow. But that's a, you know, a long way off. I think in the short term, they both most likely are in the Pac-12.
Yeah, John and I are using dates now. We're going to both be on the right side of the grass at that point.
So yeah, we will. And the reason I'm doing that is because the ACC's media contract goes till 2036. Yeah. And unless that can be broken, the ACC is going to stay together till 2036. And the Big Ten, they want Carolina, Virginia. They want to get into Florida. The SEC, they want Clemson. They want to get into Florida with Florida State, maybe Miami. So those two conferences are kind of waiting to feed on the ACC, and that will basically rupture the whole college football structure as we know it. But they probably can't do it till the ACC's contract expires in 2036. That's why the time frame is so far.
I don't want to let you go then off of this one because this may rupture. This is a recruiting question. It may be better for Brandon Huffman, but I think this is in your wheelhouse. The fans have been hearing, and I've been reading about the Rashada story. This is a quarterback on the high school level that had a Florida NIL deal that was significant and may have been pulled, may not have been pulled. John, if we're talking 2035, 2037, whatever, are we going to see $100 million NIL deals for high school kids going into college, do you believe?
No, I don't think so. First, that Rashada deal, the reports are $13 million NIL deal. That's inflated. And these deals are inflated all over the place just to make the schools and the NIL collective seem better. Nobody's getting $13 million. What's going to happen before we get to that point where the NIL market just soars is players are going to get paid. You know, there's legislation right now. The National Labor Relations Board is going to rule on a deal for employees at USC, whether student athletes or employees. What we're going to see is athletes getting paid directly from the schools. Now, whether it's straight figures like 25 grand, 50 grand per player, or whether there's a market where quarterbacks get more than left guards, I don't know how the specifics, but we will get to the point probably in the next 5 or 10 years where athletes are declared either full-time employees or part-time employees. And that will also add to the breakup of the Power Five as we've seen right now, because schools in the Big Ten, schools in the SEC are going to be able to afford to pay those players and be willing to pay those players, whereas smaller budgeted schools are going to have more trouble. So there's going to be kind of a bifurcation, and you're going to get the top 40 or 50 in major college football, and then you're going to have the second tier. It's going to be like English soccer with relegation and advancement. You know, it's going to be way different.
That is great stuff, and I could keep going, but I will let you go off that.
Okay.
Stay safe. Stay dry. I know it's pounding you out there. Stay well, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks so much, Brett.
There's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. Follow all of his content at Wilner Hotline. Follow him on Twitter, and, of course, it's on sports360az.com. We appreciate the partnership with John, and we're back with more after this timeout.